This is an ABC podcast.
Live from Menindee, this is the Country Hour on ABC Radio New South Wales, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Country Hour. We are joined by New South Wales. If you've been listening in New South Wales, this is a continuation of your program, but we're just going to welcome the South Australian listeners to the program that is taking place live from Menindee, which is in the far west of New South Wales, a bit of an overlap territory between Michael Condon and myself. Welcome for South Australia to Michael Condon, who is the South Australian, is the Country Hour presenter in New South Wales.
Well, I have actually presented the South Australian Country Hour many moons ago. Maybe some people remember we're probably talking 20 years ago.
It's actually quite interesting. Yeah. I'm from New South Wales and you're from Australia, and yet
we swapped over. That's right.
Country Hours.
Exactly right. Yeah, no, it's great to be here, and we're talking about the event, of course, Dancing on the Darling, which is happening over the next 4 days or so. And you can feel a real buzz. There's a real vibe about the event. It's really sort of kicking off tonight. So it's great to be here. But also we're putting the spotlight on some of those positives. But also we're looking at the past and some of the challenging times.
I mean, let's face it. Very recently it was quite challenging here. And with drought still continuing across much of the region, there's still a long way to go before you can really say that this region's out of a sort of tough spot here. We came here via the Sunset Strip, and you can see Lake Menindee there that would in a good season be full of water, but right now absolutely has
no water
see there, which is not great for the spirits of people who are living here. But
especially those people that have beach shacks on Sunset Strip as well.
It's not quite the view that you'd hope for there.
Yeah, that's right.
When you build a house there.
Yeah, that's right.
But one man who has been trying to turn things around here and basically just get a bit of positivity back in the community is Rob Gregory. He's the president of Menindee Tourism. Welcome to the program, Rob.
Hey, how are you?
Well, thanks. Now, I think you're a pretty busy man today.
Oh, yeah.
What was the inspiration behind this event, this Dancing on the Darling event, that's attracting singers and people performing here this weekend?
Oh, sort of the inspiration was just sort of a bit of a recovery event for the town to just lift our morale after, you know, the fish kills and the drought and everything. And it was sort of stemmed from Central Darling Shire, actually. They got some money for the drought, and there were grants available from the Shire of 15 grand, and we thought, well, maybe we could put our hand up and see if we can jag one of these grants, and we did. And then we were pretty successful getting some money in result of the fish kills from Destination New South Wales, and also some money from the feds after that. So, and it sort of grew from that. It was only going to be small because we didn't have a lot of money in the beginning, and then it's just grown, I don't know, not really out of proportion, but it's certainly grown to a good event that'll hopefully do what we wanted to achieve, you know, is bring up the morale in the community.
And I guess $15,000, but then again, that's a start, and then you get all the community involved as well. So sort of been the multiplier effect, hasn't it?
Yeah,
so we're seeing
absolutely.
There's a lot of activity, a lot of interest, and from far and wide as well, people's putting their hand up saying, we want to help out.
Oh, yeah. They've come from all over the place. Like, I've friends of mine can come right over near Wollongong, Albion Park, Appin, down Yay in Victoria, so they're all, and there's other guys here from Brisbane, so, and they're just rallied behind and, you know, giving us the support, and it'll be great for the town, you know. We'll get some dollars into the community, and we've certainly got a huge lineup of artists that, pretty tight schedule, and hopefully we run to schedule without any any balls ups and that. So
I don't know about that. I think you might have trouble there. Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, dead fish and dry dams aren't exactly a great tourism slogan. What do you want people to know about this region?
Well, it all goes back to in the days when we had water here more consistently, and Menindee didn't really have to do anything to market that. We had the lakes and everyone knew, and everyone rolled in, and it was really cruisy. And then as the flows and the water started to diminish, we had to really push tourism here to get other people to come and see the other things, you know, the Burke and Wills history, all the other stuff that's going on, you know. And Yeah, there's just so much to see. Even with the lakes empty and the sunsets and that, just huge. You know,
Copy Hollow, which is a part of the system here, it still has water in it. I passed by there today, and it looked pretty good from looking at it.
Yeah, it's really an oasis there at the moment, and it's you know, we're down to about, I think, 0.96% of capacity here, and Copy Hollow's got 5,300 odd megalitres in it. So, you know, it shows you like we're at such a low percentage in the whole scheme, but there's still quite a lot of water out there, and everyone's absolutely amazed once they go out there. And one of my businesses to run a tour boat, and I operate that out of Copy Hollow at the moment.
Yes. So you've got enough water, enough stretch of water to actually get. And the tourists, it's enough of an area for them to
do a cruise for about, it's just a little bit under an hour, and the bird life out there is fantastic. Like, I've done two runs this morning from a school, Methodist Ladies College in Sydney. They come out every year and bring a group out, and had 40 girls. And, yeah, it was just amazing. They were absolutely amazing. The amount of birds out there is just huge, you know.
Mm, incredible, isn't it? And when you see it, you don't get a sense of it unless you actually get out and see it. It's quite amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's absolutely.
And the fish life and the bird life.
240 bird species have been identified around Menindee, 80 being water birds.
I saw some pelicans this morning.
Pelicans, and there's lots of cormorants out there. As the water temperature drops away, the bony brim, they come close to the surface and an easy target for the birds. So that encourages them to come. But 240 bird species, 80 water birds.
Mm.
In Kakadu, about 90 birds have been identified there.
Yeah.
So we just get lots of birds that migrate through here, spend a bit of time, and off they go and go back to Siberia where they came from. And seagulls, everyone, they breed here. And the pelicans, well, they haven't bred here since 52 when they did the modifications on the lakes. Things changed, and they decided to not breed here anymore. But it's sort of like a bit of a retirement home now.
But they come and visit.
They come in. The old birds stay here, die here. The young ones, healthy enough, they chuff off over to Lake Eyre and breed over there.
Yeah, so there's a lot of birds heading that way with the water that's filling up in Lake Eyre. Aside from the bird life that's attracted here, who can people see if they do come to Menindee this weekend? What artists are people going to come and see?
Well, there's quite a big lineup. Our headline act is Neil Murray, and a lot of people probably know him.
Very famous songwriter and singer. Yep.
And he's got a couple of songs. He's written one for the Darling, cry the Darling or something it's called. I can't remember now. It's just left me. But he's got the one about Menindee, which was written about in 1992 when Neil was here last time. And it's about Burke and Wills and how they camped here and they just had a drunken party and off they went and basically killed themselves. So
they had a big fight, didn't they, nearby here, and then they split up, I think.
One of the guys that was actually on the journey, which is Charlie Stone, he was a local stockman from Menindee, and he actually died at Bulloo on the journey, and no one really knows about old Charlie Stone, you know, like he doesn't get mentioned in the Burke and Wills thing. But so there's Neil Murray, Greg Champion. All the ABC listeners, I'm sure, know Greg Champion.
He is on ABC.
He's going to turn up. He's going to do a performance tonight at the Albemarle Hotel. We've got Jason and Chloe Roweth. They're from over Blaney Way near Millthorpe there, or at Millthorpe they live, so Orange Way. They're on their way, and they'll be performing tonight at the Maidens Hotel. So that'll be the lead-up, the beginning of the event. And then tomorrow at 10:30 we kick off, and with some speeches, Aboriginal dances, and it goes right through with Greg Champion in the middle of the day, some local guys.
There seems to be quite a big Indigenous component to it.
Yeah, quite a bit. Yeah, we've got a large Indigenous population in Menindee, so they're heavily involved even with the catering here. The two footy teams are doing a lot of the catering, and they're both the Yabbies and the Eagles, so rugby league players, rugby league teams, I should say.
They're very fierce opponents on the field, I gather.
Quite fierce, but it's great to see them. They'll be side by side here cooking up a storm, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. So it sounds like a massive event, and going to be incredible to see what happens in regards to that. And how many people are you expecting? About 1,000 or so?
I hope so. It's a totally free event. There's no BYO, but you've got to bring your own chair. And then, of course, we've sold no tickets. We've sort of got no idea of how many people was going to arrive.
So if you're nearby, really turn up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, and that's what we found too, with a lot of people just didn't realise we were on, and they're staying over for the weekend, staying a few more days. But certainly plenty of camping room, caravans, and all that sort of stuff.
Absolutely, so. Yes, absolutely is plenty of camping room.
If that's you're not looking for rain, this is the best weather you could have.
Look, Indian summer here at the moment. I don't know what we do today. Probably 25 degrees, 27, 8 degrees maybe. But
that's right.
A bit unusual for May.
Absolutely, it is because we're just around the corner from winter. Mm. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know what we blame that on, but anyway.
Mm. Oh, well, I think there's a few theories. That's another discussion that we have occasionally on the Country Hour. Thanks for joining us on the program.
Guys, it's been a pleasure, and thanks very much.
Yeah, we're looking forward to a good weekend here in Menindee. You're listening to the New South Wales Country Hour and the South Australian Country Hour. Myself and Cassie Huff, and we're joined now by the local member who's got your training wheels on at the moment. You've only been the local member for a short time. Roy Butler, thanks for joining us on the program today.
No problems at all. Thank you for inviting me.
Beaming into New South Wales and South Australia as well today. And I guess this sort of event, having this sort of event set up and this sort of community involvement, means it's the sort of thing that Menindee and many other towns, I would imagine, in New South Wales would need at the moment.
Absolutely. And look, I'm not at all surprised to see Menindee putting on an event like this. This is such a resilient community. Despite losing lots of population, having no water in their lakes, losing lots of business from tourism and all that sort of thing, they've found a way to make it work. And I really hope it's well attended. I hope that the town sees a huge number of people come in. Hope they spend lots of money.
Will you be kicking up your heels?
Yeah, I'll be here. I'll be here this evening and I'll be here tomorrow morning. I've got to track back towards Parliament, though. I've got to be in Parliament on Monday.
Oh, yeah, right. They don't do anything in Parliament. You should be staying here for the next 3 days.
Look, if you gave me the choice, if you said, what would you rather do? I think I'd rather stay out west, don't worry.
Now, I know your Murray-Darling plan, that you had a 12-point plan, is that right?
10-point plan.
How's that been received in terms of, on the benches, in terms of the government? Have you had, no doubt you would have had discussions about that. Are they willing to look at some of those options you got on the table, and which ones do you think they might actually get behind?
Look, the funny thing, if I can just back up to the plan itself, the plan wasn't something we went out to the back shed and cooked up, over a beer. It's something that was actually consulted very broadly. It was socialised with river ecologists, water research scientists, irrigators, riparian graziers, communities, Aboriginal folk. So it was not... It was not just a one-sided thing. So by the time it actually made it out into the public domain, it had already had so much exposure to different people. It was well received by everyone. Very early after the election, I shared that with the Water Minister, Melinda Pavey. We haven't had a specific discussion about that 10-point plan, but we have had discussions about working together and collaborating on issues in the Barwon electorate that relate to water. Certainly, I sent a letter to the Water Minister last week asking for some urgent action in regards to funding for short to medium term water infrastructure. And I was really happy to see yesterday that already we've seen money flow into Louth and into Bourke in relation to short and medium term water resilience infrastructure.
Okay, now the other issue in regards to the plan, the floodplain harvesting issue, and that's they're still working out what they want to do with that, and they're consulting widely. Have you had any discussions with that? Because Melinda Pavey was on the New South Wales Country Hour saying that it wasn't likely that we'd see more earthworks, also wasn't likely there'd be more water for irrigation, mm-hmm. that she was really looking to measure what was there and also look at the environment as well. Are you pleased to hear that from the minister?
Well, that's almost consistent with our policy.
That's right.
We've said that we need to fully understand and assess the impacts of floodplain harvesting. We don't think it's time to go ahead and issue any sort of licence that has a financial value until we fully understand the impacts of it.
And in a community like Menindee, where you are now, that's a really hot topic.
Oh, absolutely. And understandably, because... one of the things that always frustrated me throughout the campaign was that, we had people talking about how we're going to manage the Murray-Darling Basin, how we should manage the Darling River. One of the things we can't do is actually measure how much water's involved. So it seems premature to start talking about managing until you've actually measured. We need to know how much water we're dealing with before we can effectively manage it. So first and foremost, understanding floodplain harvesting, how much water is involved, what are the environmental impacts. You know, there's a really important symbiotic relationship between floodplains and rivers. Sediment comes out of the river and gets deposited on the floodplain, which is why the floodplain is a healthy area that grows good feed. And similarly, biological matter goes off the floodplain into the river, which is important for the health of the river. So there's relationships there that what we certainly don't want to do is create perverse outcomes in the future, which is what a lot of our interventions in the river have done. You know, and then we've got to go and put some other intervention in the river to create a previous perverse outcome. So I can fully understand what you're talking about there.
Mm. And I guess in terms of the community, what other things are on the priority list for you to improve life or improve the opportunities for people in your electorate, which is a vast one? And it's not just in this area either.
No, it's a little bit big.
Yeah.
One of the things I talked about through the campaign and since, and even the first private member statement I had in Parliament, I talked about quality of life and regional decline. And what I'm talking about with quality of life, there's a lot of moving parts that sit underneath that. You know, we're talking about access to quality education, good health services. We're talking about public amenity, public infrastructure, employment, the things that people look for when they're looking for somewhere to set up shop. So if they get a good job and they can find a good school for the kids and they've got good health care for maybe mum or dad or for the kids who might need health care or emergency services as well. You know, across the Barwon electorate, some of our hospitals have great services and others have been stripped back to the point that they became little more than a sort of first aid post with a Panadol and a Band-Aid. For example, if you have a fracture or need stitches, in many of our towns you can't get that at the hospital. You've got to go in an ambulance to a hospital that might be 4 hours away just to have basic procedures like that. 20 years ago you could probably have your appendix out in those hospitals and also have stitches done and all that sort of thing. So I know that we've probably talked about life expectancy before out here, but do you know that in the far west of New South Wales, between 1996 and 2016, your life expectancy actually went backwards by 1.5 years.
Yes, conversely, I remember reading that. Yes,
if you live in
right.
Sydney, yeah. Your life expectancy went up by 6.9 years, same period. Mm. So then you look at the fact that back in 96, we actually had longer life expectancy in the far west than they did in the city. Mm. So quite clearly we've got the policy settings around health wrong if we want to ensure the health of our population, and that's something that is fundamental. Obviously water is right at the top of the list, because without clean, safe water, we don't stand a chance of having any communities out here that are healthy or existing. Mm. But certainly health comes close behind that.
And also for the Aboriginal community, they say that the water, the river is life, it's their blood. They you know, there's some banners over there on the wall over there, yep, that have been put together by the local Aboriginal communities, and that's an important part of their culture.
100%. And you know, there's I also acknowledge the cultural tie that non-Aboriginal folk have to the river. You know, we're talking about generations of people here who have lived in this area, who have grown up with the river, recreating on the river, fishing on the river, using it for industry and agriculture. There's a lot of people, Indigenous and non-Indigenous, with ties to the river, which is why it's such an emotive topic and why so many people are deeply personally affected by it.
Roy, no doubt we'll be talking to you on the New South Wales Country Hour into the future, but welcome to the South Australian Country Hour, so the South Australian audience can to hear from the newly elected member, even though they won't be giving you any votes.
Well, we do broadcast into the far west of New South Wales, so we do have
True.
Listeners who are keen to know what you're doing. I'm interested. This is a question without notice and might be something that you're not across, but we've been raising the issue recently on the Country Hour where the Almond Board and Citrus Australia, to a lesser extent, are both, well, Almond Board is calling for a moratorium on any new developments on the River Murray until it can actually be worked out how much water is being extracted. Citrus Australia isn't going quite that far, but they'd still like to see an appraisal of how much development is actually taking place. Now, this is in these permanent plantings that you see more in South Australia, but would you want to see something like that as well here in more the northern section, northern basin, and the lower part here that goes into the southern basin on maybe cotton or other businesses that are also extractive from the river?
Yeah, so there's a lot of businesses up and down the river that rely on water, and I suppose what we've seen in the past has been a lot of unfair criticism that has targeted industries or crop types. What we need to get away from is targeting any particular industry or crop type, because that's not fair and it's not reasonable. What we do need to do is look at the allocation and management of water, and that sits squarely with the regulator, which is government. So we've called for a five-year pause in the plan as part of our 10-point strategy, and that's about ensuring that recovery targets are paused whilst we work out how much water is involved, whilst we assess floodplain harvesting, whilst we transfer management and decision-making from Canberra to each local valley. We'd like to see local groups making decisions about water. We also want consistent metering, because at the moment we don't have a genuine no meter, no pump rule, and that's something we'd like to see. So there's a whole lot, there's 10 strategies in total, but I guess the headline ones were around understanding environmental water and getting real environmental value out of it, local decision making and consistent metering. They're the three things that we need to see happen, coupled with a pause in the plan, allowing us to actually assess what's going on. We've got obviously extraordinary weather events at the moment in terms of the dry spell. We've moved well beyond a meteorological drought, which is just a lack of rain, into a hydrological drought, which is the lack of water in storage, rivers and dams and aquifers, right into socioeconomic drought within this part of the this part of the state. So that's affecting businesses in town, it's affecting communities, we're losing population. 2007, 2017, we've lost 5,900 people out of the Barwon electorate. Water, without having water sorted out and safe, reliable water for communities, we don't stand a chance of bringing those people back, let alone the industry, the employment and the public amenity and public infrastructure that we need to support bring population back out here.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. It's been great to have a chat with you. We don't have the Shooters Farmers Fishers in South Australia, but
we will soon.
We will. Oh, will we? Okay. We'll wait for another election. We've had a couple recently, but we're way off having one in South Australia, but we'll see how that goes. Thanks so much for that.
They're way out of having one in New South Wales as well.
Yeah, look, and I think that's a really good point. Both the state and federal elections have been settled, you know, so we can take the politics out of everything. I can get on with doing what I can as a state member to try and rectify some of the issues out here. And I intend to work closely with Mark Coulton, the recently re-elected member for Parks. We have such a duplication of area with our electorates, and I fully intend to work with him. I've known Mark for a number of years. I've spoken to him plenty of times. He used to work in a building next door to him, actually. So I'm confident I can work with him to bring about good outcomes for the people who live within our respective electorates, and a lot of them we share.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us here at the live broadcast that's taking place on the New South Wales and South Australian Country Hours. You sort of overlap both listening audiences, so it's great to have you on the program. I'm Cassie Huff, and I'm joined by Michael Condon.
Indeed, you are. And, well, let's turn our attention now to one of the growers here. Tony Lombardo is joining us here. He's a local grape grower, and in terms of we were talking about the water issue earlier and horticulture and the possibility that there might be some positive uptake and positive options for the future for particularly things like table grapes. Is that the way you're seeing things in your business or looking forward?
Oh, yeah, there's a positive about it, you know, but, you can look at it positive, but if you haven't got water, it's just...
It
means nothing, really.
Yeah. I guess what they're saying is too is the price has increased quite a lot, so makes it economically a bit more viable.
Yeah, it's like with grapes and oranges at the moment, it's a real positive. But like I said, water allocation at the moment it's only 20%, so it's only like survival only. So if it's only survival, you can't pick. So makes it hard.
Yeah, makes it very, very difficult. And how difficult has it been, and how long has it been a tough time for you?
Oh, it's been since probably 20 years where they keep on releasing the water out of the lakes. So it makes it hard when you're only left with pools of water. And not only the pools of water, it's cell line, it's salty. So... You know,
that has its own challenges for the plants and productivity.
The fruit doesn't come very good, so it makes it very hard to.
And what sort of license do you have? A permit? You have a high security permanent license?
So
even then, you've got the water quality issue.
Yeah, that's right. So it makes it very hard. So it's you know, you talk about prices or whatever, but if you haven't got quality water, it makes it very hard to. Get the high prices.
Yeah, and I guess that would be something that we hear from wool growers as well. The price of wool is high, but they can't actually cut enough wool.
They
don't have enough sheep in the yards to produce it. So, and absolutely, that's a function of the water in the river and also of the drought.
Yeah, well, that's right, the drought, but it's not only mismanagement of the lakes as well. So they need to leave some sort of portion of water, not only for the river, for the fish, for the industries and for the towns.
So the so that release that we do see and we have seen in 2018 of the Menindee Lake water, you would have been vehemently opposed to that.
Yeah, well, that's right. You know, it's just, but you know, you'd have a high allocation, then they'll give you more or less zero allocation in space of 1 year.
Mm.
So how can you plan for the future for that? You can't plan for the future for that. Mm. So I like to expand, but it's hard to expand when you've got water situations.
Yes, indeed.
And they're releasing the water. So
yeah, and the allocations look like they're heading south again for quite a number of states, Victoria and South Australia and New South Wales. Yeah. Tony, thanks for your time on the program today. On the New South Wales Country Hour, it's news time.
Live from Menindee, this is the Country Hour on ABC Radio New South Wales, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Hello, you're still with myself, Cassie Huff, and Michael Condon. We are the Country Hour presenters for New South Wales and South Australia. We're broadcasting live from Menindee, but we're just going to head across to the news desk briefly. We're catching up with Gary John Lysart to find out what's happening in news. Hi, Gary John.
Hi, Cassie. The AMA has delivered a scathing assessment of Australia's health system, describing the state of public hospitals as struggling and unacceptable. President Dr. Tony Bartone told delegates one of the AMA's priorities over the next 12 months will be fighting for funding for public hospitals. He says the system is stretched so tight important elective surgeries are being cancelled. Greens MLC Mark Parnell says the public has been excluded from having a say on a controversial Kangaroo Island development. The State Commission Assessment Panel is considering whether to permit the Australian Walking Company to build new accommodation within the Flinders Chase National Park. Adani has welcomed a June 13 deadline being set for the final two environmental approvals on its stalled Carmichael coal mine in central Queensland, and the state government has introduced a new levy aimed at boosting funding for the Outback Communities Authority. The levy, estimated at $100 to $400 per property, will apply in Outback areas with no council. And there'll be more ABC News at 1 o'clock.
Thanks so much for that, Gary John. You're listening to the South Australian Country Hour. It's 29 minutes to one, and we're going to head across now to the Bureau of Meteorology. We're joined by Vince Rollins. Hi, Vince.
Hello, Cassie.
So I'm in the far west of New South Wales at the moment, and it is about 27 degrees here. It has to be a long way above average. What's happening around South Australia?
Yeah, just getting those northerly winds, Cassie, ahead of the trough. And we've got that trough just sort of sitting through central parts of South Australia at the moment. We've still got a bit of mid-level clouds sitting over the northern agricultural areas and probably getting just the odd spot out of that. And we had a little bit of thunderstorm activity over near the eastern border in that mid-level cloud earlier this morning. And overnight, as that trough did move across the south and west of the state, we did get a bit of thunderstorm activity and shower activity. And just having a look at some of the areas where we did get a little bit of rainfall, just a little bit over southern parts of Eyre Peninsula. We've got 0.6 at Elliston, 4 millimetres at Coffin Bay, 1.4 at Port Lincoln. As it moved over the Adelaide region, the highest falls we got were up in the hills with 3.6 at Ashton. Across the metro area, generally around a sort of 1 to 2 millimetres. And then if we go York Peninsula, we got up to a couple of millimetres at Stenhouse Bay. And in the southeast, the highest falls that we've recorded was 5 millimetres at Menindee. And on Kangaroo Island, we've got 4.8 at Kingscote. So a little bit of rainfall, probably not going to see too much more. There's a little bit of a line going through, we're approaching Mount Gambier at the moment, so they might see a little bit more rainfall, but we are expecting a frontal feature to move across the state overnight tonight into tomorrow. So we will see quite a lot of shower activity generated across the south of the state as that front moves through. Maybe might get a rumble of thunder across central parts as well. We're still analysing that, so we'll keep an eye on it. But yeah, it looks like quite a bit of shower activity, particularly about the southern agricultural area tomorrow. But before that happens, we will see clear skies over northern agricultural areas and the southern pastoral district. So we are expecting some fog through those regions during Saturday morning and again Sunday morning. But the showers are basically going to continue for the next 5 to 6 days as we get a series of embedded fronts in this sort of west to southwesterly airstream that we are expecting across the state. So we will see showers ease a little bit overnight Saturday and then into Sunday, but still showers expected to continue about the agricultural areas. Again on Monday, the showers continuing with a bit of an increase in activity during Tuesday, and then on Wednesday we start to see showers easing a little bit further as the next high pressure system comes in. But on Wednesday in particular, we do get a burst of cold air just coming up over the southeast district, so we could see some small hail and some possible thunderstorm activity basically east of the Mount Lofty Ranges during Wednesday. But as we get into Thursday, Friday, the high pressure system moves into a position south of the Bight, becomes our sort of dominant feature for the next few days. So showers really contracting to coastal fringes, start to see some pretty clear skies inland, so we are expecting some pretty cold mornings during Thursday and Friday, but generally it's really the next sort of 4 to 5 days where we are expecting most of the shower activity across the state. As far as totals go, not really changing much from what we were mentioning yesterday, so we're generally looking at falls of around 1 to 5 millimetres over the northern agricultural area, a little bit less over the southern pastoral districts, and then we're looking at 5 to 10 millimetres over the southern agricultural area. Some places might get a little bit more, but I think that generally the highest falls are going to be over the Mount Lofty Ranges and around the lower southeast, where we could see falls getting up to about 30 millimetres. So some reasonable further falls in those areas from what we've seen so far this month. But generally across the agricultural area, we will see some rainfall over the next 4 to 5 days. As far as warnings go, we do have some coastal wind warnings out at the moment, and with this next front coming through, that looks like those will continue. If you are planning on doing any marine activities over the next few days, just keep an eye on the Bureau's webpage for any updates to those warnings.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of people are ripping in to try and get some sowing done ahead of that rain. Hopefully that all develops across the regions that it needed in particular. Sounds like the Mallee's going to miss out a little bit, though, unfortunately. Thanks for that, Vince.
No worries, Cassie.
That was Vince Rollins from the Bureau of Meteorology speaking there. And we'll head to the western inland weather now, probably the most important weather for us today, as that is exactly where we are. It's going to be mostly sunny in the upper western. Overnight temperatures will fall to between 10 and 13 degrees, but the daytime temperatures will reach the mid to high 20s. The lower western will be partly cloudy. There's a slight chance of a shower. I'm sure that will not dampen anyone's spirits here in Menindee.
They'd be happy to see it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But overnight temperatures are going to fall to between 11 and 14 degrees, but should reach up to the low to mid-20s. So still some pretty nice weather for getting out and about. You're listening to the South Australian Country Hour. It's 23 minutes to one.
This Sunday on Landline, non-narcotic industrial hemp. You can make a house out of it.
But can we burn it down?
Well, let's give it a go.
Even after 10 minutes of flames of several thousand degrees, this hempcrete panel failed to combust.
And respecting prized and increasingly rare Tasmanian timbers. Landline, Sunday 12:30 on ABC TV.
Always well worth a watch, Landline there on ABC TV. You're listening to the South Australian Country Hour. I'm Cassie Huff, and I'm joined by Michael Condon, who is the presenter of the New South Wales Country Hour. And we're here in Menindee, which is in the far west of New South Wales. It's about an hour and a little bit southeast of Broken Hill. And we're speaking with Graham McCrabb, who is a local here in the town of Menindee. And you might remember back to the horrible events we saw over summer with the fish that were dying in this part of the world. Well, Graham was crucial in raising the alarm about these fish dying, and I'm joined by Graham now. Hi, Graham.
How are you going, Cassie?
Well, thanks. So when you first saw those fish, What did you think? What ran through your mind when you were looking out from that bridge and you saw hundreds of fish on the surface?
Yeah, it was distressing. So that was the second kill that I was probably came across first. We spent a fair bit of time on the first one in mid-December. So it was just an odd sight to see the cart really struggling and stop the car to have a look and look over the side. And there was Barney Brim dead there for hundreds of metres at that stage. So, and it was just unfolding at that point. They'd really only just started to perish at that stage of the day. So, yeah, it's very upsetting.
And that was the big kill, wasn't it? The second one was the one where you saw a million fish die and then it got even worse later on.
Exactly. So there's tens of thousands in the first kill, approximately a million in the
second kill, yeah.
And millions three plus million in the third. So it's a two-day process from what we've seen now. They start dying the first day, continue to die through the afternoon, and then the big numbers rise and still perish the next morning. So
a total of about 4 million dead.
Over 4 to 7 million.
Right, okay, so yep. It could be as much as 7 million
yep.
now.
Yep. Yep, for sure.
So a catastrophe, really, and it has had political impact. You'd think that it has put the spotlight on the region, on the water issue, and it's actually seen some political action.
Well, I think it was part of the process with water. Water's been a real battle all the way through. So it highlighted the issues, I think, for those places like Walgett and Brewarrina, Burke, Louth, Tilbury, all those places on the Darling. It's allowed a spotlight to be shone in dark places that people probably knew of but didn't really understand the process. So those guys have been able to work in really well on the back of the fish kill and use the media to highlight the issues that we've all seen, to be honest.
And you love your fish. We really got a sense of that through the fish kill events. You were rescuing them from the river. What's happened to those fish that you rescued?
The ones we rescued in the river were stayed in the river. The ones that actually were taken away were rescued by DPI, and they were they've been taken to Narandera. There was 20 cod rescued, 10 males, 10 females, fortunately, and that... they're ready to breed this year. They've settled in really well up there. I was up there a couple of weeks ago. They look fantastic. They're all around that metre-plus cod. To see them swimming on the surface and quite happy and comfortable is quite a pleasing sight, to be honest.
I can imagine, for fishermen like yourself.
I haven't actually fished since the first fish kill, to be honest. I haven't, not quite sure why, but the motivation's not quite there at this stage. So.
And we were talking about the need to preserve the genetics of the Murray cod, and we've spoken to you about this before, because they're unique to this part of the river. They're unique to Australia in that small part of the river.
They are. A cod are very territorial, so they tend to stay where they've been bred. So the fish we had here, the oldest one was about 25 or 7 years old, so the expectation that fish grew up in this Weirpool right at the back of town, there was three at that age group. Born here, lived here and bred here, so it is a unique genetic species. It's probably pretty hard to get cod for the same reason to come up from the Murray, and it's a unique part of the world with the lake system. There's 80% of the golden perch are recruited here in Menindee for the whole basin, so there's plenty of places that perch breed, but there's very little places that they can go for natural habitat to feed on plankton and shrimp. The lake's one of the last natural resources for that.
And is 20, and having 20 in Narandera, is that enough to repopulate?
It's a pretty insignificant number, really,
yeah,
in the
is,
context
isn't it?
With it.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, and 20 fish to be rescued after $9 billion being spent on a $13 billion plan. It's a pretty poor result, really, I think, for everyone. Pretty embarrassing, I think, even for everyone here that didn't make those decisions. As a generation, we need to take more account for the fact that we've ended up with, you know, millions of dead fish here at Menindee, and it's a real warning sign for the rest of the basin just on the direction it's heading.
But is there a chance that there may be higher numbers that might be bred up with into the future as well?
Well, we're going to have a hatchery here, so it's been announced. So federal funding's been announced for the hatchery. It's probably unlikely with the skill set that's at Narandera. I think the perch and the cod they can breed there is probably a focus for them. It'd be more likely catfish and some of the other rarer species that haven't been caught here for a long time now that will be bred here and released.
Where exactly will they be bred? Is it in the Menindee system here?
No, it'll be a hatchery, so we'll have grow-out ponds, and so it'll be an artificial-type process. The fish get injected with hormones and that to bring on the eggs. They get fertilised and then grown out in tanks and hopefully probably past the fingerling stage, so past that sort of 3 or 4 inches, probably hopefully 6 to 10 inches long, released with a good chance of survival in the river system, and hopefully we're all working towards having more water and more water security here in the lakes so that those fish have a really fighting chance to go forth and keep breeding.
Well, there's nothing like a flush through the river really to trigger breeding, is there?
Well, it needs a flush. That's the natural part of it. And the other issue here is we had a lot of fingerlings here that were bred up from the 16-17 event. They needed another flush to push them out into the Murray system. So they obviously missed out on that because they've perished here. So it's a process. You need one flood to encourage the breeding, and you need the next one to push those fingerlings down into the Murray and spread out through that system. So, yeah, it's an ongoing process. So it's not just a once-off event over one out of every five. You need probably decent flows down here once every two or three years, to be honest.
And you're listening to the Country Hour, the South Australian Country Hour. We are here in Menindee. You can probably hear a bit of noise in the background as we're setting up. Well, we're not setting up. We're standing here watching people set up.
No, we're just luxuriating here. Well, everyone else is doing all the hard work.
Just get to talk. But they're setting up for a big event. It's called Dancing on the Darling. What is it, Graham?
It's a festival that's been organised. Rob Gregory, President of the Tourist Association, has been a big push to get this festival done. He's had a lot of help, but we've only had really 3 months to get this up. It's coming together pretty well, but it's about the town, a way of enjoying the town and showing other people around the country just how good it is at Menindee. Beautiful weather today and the little bit of rain we've had screened it up. It's pretty special at the moment.
How much rain has this region had recently?
We've had about 50 or 60 mil, I think, since Easter. We've had about 90 for the year so far. So we're just below average at the moment for this year, but on the back of two well below average years, it's still a battle.
We're standing here right near the Menindee Oval. I didn't actually know that Menindee had an oval, but they've got two league teams. It's quite a thriving metropolis here on the banks of Lake Menindee, and it is brilliant green. And there's quite a lot of green pick on the drive from Broken Hill to here. What's that done for spirits in this area?
Oh, there's no doubt green grass. It takes a lot of pressure off the farmers. They've been constantly feeding there for probably 12 months. So even just from a physical point of view, people have more time in their hands, and from an emotional, spiritual point of view, to see green's pretty good, isn't it? Like, you can still see the red ground here, but the contrast of red and green's pretty nice to look at, to be honest.
Absolutely. It's part of what sets this place apart from the rest of the world, really, the contrast of, and then the blue of the sky. It's really quite a stark place to live. And as we were hearing earlier from Rob Gregory, there's a few artists coming out here, and I'm guessing the entire town's involved.
Yeah, pretty much so. So the Tourist Association started the process. The working committee's just made up of anyone that wanted to get involved to help. So, and as you saw this morning, there's probably been a dozen or 15 people here most of the time, and they've come and gone to help out, so to set up. So, yeah, no, it's good. It's good to have some community involvement. And we're really grateful for the ABC coming out. And those acts have travelled from Queensland, Victoria, et cetera, to be here today. So some are on the way up the road now to be here for tomorrow. So,
well, we actually even have one here who is going to be on the program in just a moment. So thanks so much for joining us, Graham.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming out.
Graham McCrabb, who's a local fisherman, hasn't been fishing for a while, and also a staunch community member. You're listening to The Country Hour in South Australia with Cassie Huff and Michael Condon. And before we find out about a bit more of the entertainment, let's look at water, because it's a lifeblood for farmers and communities in western New South Wales. But the drought and concerns over monitoring and compliance, it's angered graziers who've been struggling with a lack of water, battling politicians as well. A new floodplain harvesting policy is being developed in New South Wales, but the state's new water minister, Melinda Pavey, says that doesn't mean more water for irrigation. Justin McClure is a grazier at Killara Station in Tilpa. He's been in Dubbo this week attending a floodplain meeting and spoke to Tim Fuchs about the critical water situation in western New South Wales.
The West is a very resilient community. The Wilcannia community is dear to my heart, and it's great to see support from the state government and now the federal government to put a weir regulator in at Wilcannia. I'll stress to both governments that what we do down there, it needs to be done correctly. It needs to be a full-blown regulator that is able to be managed to protect the environment, to satisfy the community's requests, to give, I guess, a quality of life to those that live in the probably the most disadvantaged, or one of the most disadvantaged areas of our state. And I'll stress to both governments that let's get this process right. I don't think they've quite got it right at the moment. While they have an agreement on the location of the weir, we need to know exactly what we're getting and what it will deliver.
Could you describe for us the water situation for you?
Look, we've had a flush in the river. We've had a replenishment or a flow out of the Warrego, and that coupled with local rain has I guess, really lifted the spirits of the local community. It's that flow is now nearing the halfway point down to Wilcannia. The flow is the lifeblood of our existence, and all communities rely on that flow. Not having a flow for 250 to 280 days has been a struggle. We live on an event river, but we need water. We need water in the river, and we need rain when it comes from the sky. So, yeah, water is lifeblood of everything we do, and the communities everywhere rely on water for survival.
So you've been attending, along with others, a meeting in Dubbo about this issue. What kind of response has there been from others that you have been talking to?
Look, we had an Australian Floodplain Association meeting. We identified some key points of our ongoing business, and we had some quality guest speakers yesterday, and Mick Kilty being one of them, who has given us a lot of confidence going forward. His job is as a cross-border water commissioner. He intends to make some recommendations to the feds to help get the basin plan up and running and give it an effectiveness that we are yet to see. I must say DOI Water has been particularly supportive of those of us in the West who have gone through this extended dry spell. Minister Pavey in particular has been very supportive in getting flows through the system. And we must applaud her for that, because under the past regime, it was very, very difficult to get tractions.
And so in saying that, are you confident that the response you've seen from the re-elected state government, and also, of course, dealings that you and others will have had with the federal government in terms of the Murray-Darling Basin Authority, that the measures are in place to ensure that there is continued water flow?
Tim, no, I'm not confident, but I'm heartened by the response we're getting from the current New South Wales government, in particular Minister Pavey. I'm quite disenchanted with the leadership of the federal government, and I think we're all disenchanted with the opposition's approach. They've got a bipartisan agreement, and I think they've missed the mark. They've had quite a while to make this plan work. They keep telling us to be patient and to see some results. But reality is that Queensland don't come on board until 2024. And until that happens, it's Rafferty rules in the north. And I think we're very fortunate that the New South Wales government has recognised this, and they are taking steps to put pressure or talk and work with the Queensland government to get an outcome.
How much of the current situation, Justin, is down to the real problem, in fact, that there's just not enough rain falling? How much of it comes down to that compared to how much government agencies have had a role to play here?
Look, a lack of rainfall is definitely a contributing factor, and rainfall variables will come and go. This particular occurrence is rainfall deficit. Okay, we acknowledge that, but we need to plan forward. We need to plan for the big picture. We need to get our policy settings correct, because we can't have a situation where every time we've got a dry spell, and that's what happens, every time we get a dry spell, we actually realise what we haven't got. So the policy settings at the top level needed to be attended to, so that we have connectivity right through the system, and I'm talking from the top of the watershed to the Murray mouth, because there's an inequity there at the moment. The southern irrigators are really struggling. Those of us in the south of the northern basin are really, really struggling. The northern basin farmers themselves are struggling because of rainfall deficit. But when you live at the end of the system, you cop both ends of the pineapple, and unfortunately those that live in the Bowen Darling, because of poor policy settings at a federal level, we are copping the blunt end.
That's Grazier Justin McClure from Killara Station in Tilpa speaking to Tim Fuchs, and he's also the brand new president of the Floodplain Floodplain Association as well. He was just elected to that position in the last couple of days or so, Cassie. So there you go.
There you go.
You're hearing it first here on the Country Hour.
Breaking
the South
news.
Australian Country Hour, that's right.
It's an odd word, odd title for you to say.
I've done it before. Yeah. I did it for 3 months over Christmas when no one else wanted to do it. I was doing it.
You can come back next Christmas too. You'd be welcome.
Okay.
It's 6 minutes to 12 here on the Country Hour, and we've been talking about this Dancing on the Darling event that's taking place in Menindee to try and boost the spirits of this region that's really seen a bit of strife with fish kills and not a lot of water around and only just recently getting some rain, that there's been some money put towards a bit of a concert. And we heard that some Australian musical acts that you might have heard of, Neil Murray, Greg Champion, Marsha Howard, are all heading to the two-day festival that's going to be on here. But I think probably one of the singers who's going to get the biggest cheer is a local hero, William Murphy. He joins me now. Hi, William.
How going?
I'm well, thank you. So you're not a Menindee local. What brought you here?
Oh, well, you might as well say I'm a Menindee local. I've been here since 1987. I first came out here to do a wedding in 1987 because somebody pulled out. So I was doing a gig in Sydney at 5 Dock RSL, can't forget it. And after the gig, I was only about 17 at the time of the gig. We had to pack everything up. And that long drive here to Menindee, and I'm going, are we going to finally get there? Are we going to finally get
there? Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
That's it.
Like the horizon keeps going forever. There's,
yeah.
there's red dirt and blue sky, and that's it. But you got here, and you didn't leave.
Well, I did. Then I came back 8 years ago and worked here 5 years at the school, coaching performing arts with the school kids.
And this region has quite a strong history of performing arts. I mean, with Broken Hill, you've got Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. There's a lot of things that happen here in this part of the world when it comes to the arts and theatre. How receptive have you found the community to your coaching?
Oh, fantastic. They all get into it. You know, we have a women's choir here as well. We have a theatre group for the kids, and they rehearse every Sunday, and they'll be performing tomorrow as well. And they're called Kutnya. Performing arts.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. There will be quite a few Indigenous acts as well performing at the Dancing on the Darling event here. Now, you haven't stayed in Menindee. Where else have you travelled around this region?
Oh, Wakanya. I taught out at Wakanya for a year and basically do a few gigs in Broken Hill while I was here at Mario's Palace.
Right. And...
I was going to say you're also a female impersonator act, so that is that your. But you also were singing at the wedding, so you've got a few strings to your bow.
Yeah,
I mean, or your feather boa.
Yeah, the female impersonation thing. It was just a gimmick. It's a novelty that I started out just to break up my act as going from a male vocalist to. You know, something a little bit different than...
Is that part of the act that over this weekend as well?
Yes. Mm. So yeah. I'm going to pull that
out.
Yeah.
I feel like we shouldn't tell people who you are a female impersonator of. Mm-hmm. I feel like you should show people
That's
who
right.
you are a female impersonator
you
of.
You reckon?
Yeah, we don't have any musical accompaniment, so we're putting you on the spot a little bit, William. But can you just to give the audience a bit of a taste of who you impersonate?
I can't you. I need you. My heart's on fire. Come to me wild and wild.
Okay, that's going to get a big cheer. And I think anyone who's listening is going to know that is Tina Turner. Have you got the full gear? Have you got the wig?
Yep,
have you got the outfit?
Wigs, got the stilettos, the whole caboodle.
And I bet you'll perform a different number when you're at the Rugby League Grand Final and handing out the prizes, right?
That's it.
I don't know. I reckon that'd be a great gig for that as well.
Terrific. Yeah, no, absolutely. That's right. Yeah.
Well, we do wish you luck on your performance. I'm sure you'll have a great support here. Will you have any school children joining you?
Oh, yes.
They'll get up with you as well.
And also you're shepherding through the other act as well, so you'll be supervising that too. So you'll be a busy man this weekend.
Yeah, we've got a great lineup. Absolute great lineup, and we've got a new band out who'll be performing tomorrow. It's called The Boys, and they're local. So the lead singer's a local from here, and they're more funk Stevie Wonder type of a group. And it's a six piece, and then you've got Chrissy Murphy, which is pretty country rock, and that's a five piece.
There's something for everyone.
Yeah,
Dancing on
and
the Darling.
Sounds that's like it. Quite a few locals getting involved, which is fantastic.
Yep.
It's great. It's terrific. So must have a quite a vibrant music scene here, Brewarrina.
Menindee's pretty, you know, they like good music and they're very musical.
Yeah.
With a little is a great little musical town.
The amount of time I've spent here, I have definitely picked up on that as well. Well, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you dressed up in your for your performance. It sounds that with that little introduction you gave us, there's going to be so much to see. Thank you so much, William.
Thank you.
That was William Murphy. He's one of the performers at the Dancing on the Darling event, which is what has drawn Michael Condon and myself out here to the far west of New South Wales, to Menindee, where we have clear blue skies. I know everyone's wanting to see a bit more
degrees,
rain.
27 degrees, no rain.
I think it'd be great if it could not just be Dancing on the Darling, but Dancing in the Rain as well. That would be a...
That's right. Singing in the Rain, that's what we need. Everyone. I think they were saying something about getting a couple of millimetres or so, which... over the next few days or so, which, yeah, I think they'd be happy with that, settle the dust a bit.
It's for the Lower Western, which is a fairly broad region. don't know exactly where that's going to fall, but thanks so much for joining us. It's been great to be out here. And if you are listening into the South Australian ABC next week, there will be more outside broadcasts along the river in Pooncarie, Murray Bridge, Goolwa, Renmark. There's going to be a lot of outside broadcasts that are going to be well worth a
local
listen.
Morning shows. Adelaide Radio is broadcasting as well, so a whole bunch of stuff out here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, fantastic.
So do keep listening. I'm Cassie Huff. And
I'm Michael Condon.
And that's it from the South Australian and earlier New South Wales Country Hour.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.